There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com. Career Connect.
In studio with us this evening, Shane Phillips, Managing Director of the Phillips Group, and Abdullah Shnane, who's a partner at BSA, Ahmed bin Hazim and Associates LLP. Welcome to you both. Shane, welcome back to you. Sorry, I need to put your mic on.
Phones weren't on or the mic's not on. There we go.
Good to have you back with us, of course. And good to have you with us for the first time, Abdullah.
Thank you for having me, Claire.
Lovely to have you here. If you've got questions this evening for either of our guests, 4001, of course, is the number. Abdullah can help with all sorts of legal questions, and Shane can help with, well, pretty much anything he has an opinion on. Right, we've got a couple of topics we're going to dive into this evening. Shane, I know you want to talk about slackers, and we're going to get onto that very shortly. We'll also get onto any questions that come in, of course. But first, a Google employee who wrote a controversial memo about workplace diversity has been fired, reports suggest. A controversial memo broke the firm's code of conduct, and Google's chief executive, Sundar Pichai, said on Monday in an email to employees that they were letting the staff member who wrote it go. It's been shared widely, the memo that the guy wrote, and it suggested that there were fewer women at Google due to biological differences. Apparently, the text in it crossed the line due to advancing harmful gender stereotypes in our workplace. So I guess my first question is, what do we think about this? Was it right to let him go because it damages the company? Or is it PC gone mad? Aren't we entitled to our opinion, Shane?
Well, I think this is a growing concern. In this particular case, it was an internal communication. But, you know, I think now as we're in the social media age or digital age, whatever you want to call it, I think people will definitely have and will be terminated for not sending the right messaging or not exhibiting the right values which are congruent with the organization itself. And it's not the first time where you've seen something like this. In this case, it was an explicit termination, but sending an email or a memo that is not in line with the culture and values of the organization can get a lot of knives out for you. It can start to make other executives start to target you, to marginalize you, to push you out. This is an extreme case, which was an immediate termination. But I think absolutely, especially if you're a senior executive, you need to be a champion of the values. At the end of the day, leaders are culture creators. They are the ones who are creating the identity for the organization. And if you're not echoing those values, whether it's in a memo or in your actions or on a plane, wherever you are, I think you should definitely be terminated.
Do you agree with that, Abdullah? I mean, you know, from Google's perspective, the kind of forward-thinking company they want to project themselves to be, this has kind of undermined that. So is it fair enough that that guy's got to go, or should we at least be talking about a warning, first of all?
Well, I think you always should give a warning and do a written investigation before you let someone go, just to limit your exposure. But again, it's up to the company, its policies, and the jurisdiction. So, for example, in this jurisdiction, you don't see a lot of similar cases. It's not something we have to deal with. It just doesn't come up. Whether that's due to non-existent of, you know, sexism or whatever you want to call it, or because of the laws prohibited, we don't know. But we just don't see those types of cases here.
I'm wondering, Shane, do you think it's going too far? The memo was called Google's Ideological Echo Chamber. And he really, really went to town saying that the notion that women are less interested in high-stress jobs because they get more anxious was one of the things that he said to rationalize the gender gap in the tech industry. Do you think that firing him was going too far? And I guess the other thing that I'd want to know is, how do we get over this kind of mentality as well?
I mean, you don't know the full case of the story. You know, I have been in other cases where people have been terminated, and, you know, the rhetoric in the market is, well, how could they fire that person? And then when you meet with the chairman or the CEO, there's a whole slew of other things. Generally, people are creatures of habit. So I'm sure this was not an isolated incident. If you're going as far and writing an abrasive, sexist memo as this one, you probably have other indictments along the way. So I'm sure this individual, I think he should have been terminated. And, you know, I stick with my original piece that and this is one of the places where, you know, I think leaders sometimes slip is when your team members, especially your senior executive leaders, are not following the values of the organization and you let those slip. So it could be even, for example, someone picks up the telephone and gives an earful to a subordinate complete with curses. You let that slide. That's not really an insult to that subordinate. That's an insult to the values of the organization. And that starts to corrode the overall character and culture. And this is what the CEO and the chairman, they need to be custodians of the values and culture of the organization. And yes, I think you do have to release the hatchet man to protect those values.
Abdullah, one of the questions that we get asked a lot here is about how you go about letting someone go if they've done something that doesn't fit in with the company. Now, so let's park the Google situation and it being related to discrimination. But if you've got an employee that isn't behaving how you want them to or isn't up to scratch in some way, what's the process you should go through as an employer in terms of written warnings or verbal warnings and that kind of thing here?
Well, absolutely. The law set out the procedures that you have to follow before you let someone go. They have to be warned. You have to do investigation. And you have to inform them that whatever they're doing wrong, if it is repeated, they would be eventually terminated. And even if you follow all of these procedures, you're still at risk of facing abusive termination and having to compensate. But what's might be good for the employers in this region is that your exposure is limited at 3 months' salaries, so you're not exposed like in other regions when you have to pay millions for letting someone go. You know what your exposure is, and this creates an environment where both parties know what they're entitled to and what they're not, and it makes the situation clearer to everyone.
Okay, thank you. I mean, we all often get asked that, don't we, Sally? How do I go about doing it here?
We do. We get asked that quite a bit. But Shane, I wanted to come back to your point about those in the leadership position. They need to uphold those values first that are important. But what do you do as somebody who is in a company who experiences, say, you know, that outburst from the boss? The boss is the boss. How do you deal with that? How do you go about dealing with that? Because it's one thing to say, let's change the culture of the organization, right? Because that kind of has to come from the top. But how do you do it when you're working under somebody who's like that?
Sure. So, I mean, you're meaning that this is a divisional leader, because if it's the chairman or the CEO of the company and you're not... you know, it's not an approach you subscribe to. You probably have to leave the organization if it's the chairman or the CEO. If it's a divisional CEO, you can try to challenge that individual. It most likely will be a fatal attempt. So two things that you can do is, one, start making your projects interdisciplinary so that, you know, if you're manufacturing, start interacting with sales, with marketing, start making your project cross organizational boundaries. Two, get a voice and get visibility even outside your organization. So if you have global offices, get a project that incorporates the other offices. If you can, do a JV or an MOU with another company, give yourself visibility outside the organization. So make your projects bigger than your manager and give yourself visibility beyond him. Two, you can send an email and CC his boss and say, look, I don't believe that this is appropriate the way you are interacting with me, knowing that you're sparking that war. But if you have done the preemptive work, which means that you have built social capital within your organization, you have developed projects which give you visibility inter-organizationally and inter-geographically, you start to prepare yourself and create some sort of a defense.
So it's kind of like an exit plan that you're setting up for yourself, basically.
An escape plan.
Yeah, so if the head of marketing says, look, we're going to sack this guy, and then the head of sales or the head of R&D can say, no, I want him on my team, and you can, you know, like companies like Microsoft or some of these huge companies, they can work like that.
Okay, plenty more to come on Career Connect this evening. 4001 if you have any comments on any of the topics we're discussing, or of course questions for our guests this evening. Coming up next, well, we'll be talking about slackers in the workplace. How do you deal with them, and how do slackers sometimes get ahead?
This is Drive Live
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
It's Career Connect this evening with Claire and Sally here on Drive Live. We've got Shane Phillips, Managing Director of the Phillips Group, in the studio with us. Also, Abdullah Shanane, who is partner at BSA Ahmed bin Hazim and Associates, to answer any legal questions that come up in this afternoon's conversation. Now, we've all come across them. Someone at work, or worse still, in our team, who doesn't pull their weight. They find ways to get out of difficult tasks. They work through tasks more slowly than the rest of us. They take more sick days than anyone else. Or maybe they're always on a cigarette break just when you need to ask them something. Very frustrating it can be. But are these workers being misjudged? Shane, is there room in the workplace for slackers?
Well, I think it really depends on what your business model is and what the stage of development your company is. You know, if you're something like, you know, a Tesla, which is a challenger brand, which is a disruptive brand, which is taking on huge multinationals, there's probably not a lot of room for a slacker. If you're in a more mature business, which perhaps you maybe even have a monopoly, or you have certain patents which are protecting your market position, and some of the work is rather mundane, then maybe slackers are a great asset to you.
Well, even if not working very hard and annoying the rest of the team, because if whatever job you do, if the person next to you is working half as hard and getting the same salary as you just because they've got a different attitude to life, it bugs you, right?
Yeah, but that's an internal equity issue.
But it becomes a company's issue potentially, because resentments build up and the team is not cohesive.
Correct, and that will also stem from a couple issues. One, a lack of equality, which I think the Google memo was speaking to. Two, not having the right performance management systems in place. And often managers can't put in performance management systems, because in order to do that, you need to have a clear vision and a clear strategy. And a lot of companies actually have no vision whatsoever. So because of a result of that, you can't actually put a proper performance management system in place. And hence, you start to create an environment where slackers can manifest themselves. I think it all comes back to the leadership. You know, is the leadership, someone like a Steve Jobs who's trailblazing through the industry, or is the leadership appointed? Is it a quasi-governmental institution, and perhaps even the leadership doesn't even have any industry experience? That has its own nuances, that either leadership can buttress up their position with some industry specialists and try to compensate, or it does create an environment where you will have slackers. And what the slacker really does is will rob top performers, you know, of their careers. And
how do they do that?
Well, you can sit there for example, I guess I don't know if we can talk about racism, but, certain races people feel don't work as hard. And if you are one of those races and you are a top performer and you have a huge IQ and you perform very well, you will actually be hurt with that stigma. And it can actually destroy your career, and actually can make it 10 times harder for someone from one of those groups. Two, if you are working underneath a slacker, that individual will be missing opportunities to grow. That individual will be threatened by an A player. The number one person who fires an A player is a C player, right? Because C players are threatened by A players. If you're a slacker, generally you'll be driven by fear. You'll be trying to hold on to your position. You'll see change as a threat.
Stay in the mediocrity, basically.
Yes, and you'll see change as a threat to your position. Whereas if you're an A player, you'll see change as an opportunity, and you want to be, you want to be one of the brushstrokes that are defining the face of your industry. If you're a slacker, you won't even have any interest in your industry. In fact, switching industries will be fine for you, right? And on the other side of the coin, if you only have you know, A players or these really kind of driven, ambitious, huge IQ individuals, you probably will have World War III on your hand, because generally they're very opinionated, they're not very agreeable, and this is also one of the fallacies of A players, that they tend to get into conflict more often, they tend to get into fights more often, they tend to breed more enemies, whereas slackers will go along to get along, and in that sense may have more social capital, may have more relationships, and at the end of the day, they may leverage those to advance their careers at sometimes in a more effective way than an A player may.
4001, what do you think about this? Are you a slacker? We'd love to hear from you. We don't have to name you. Or do you work with one? How frustrating do you find it? Also, if you've got any legal questions, a couple coming in now, Abdullah. This one says, I've cancelled my visa with my previous employer, but I haven't received my settlement yet. And on top of that, the company wants to give me only a certain percentage of my settlement, not all of it. Have I got any legal rights here?
Of course. And the first thing you need to do is file a complaint with the Ministry of Labor or with this similar department if you're in a free zone, because you cannot go to court before doing that step. They will try to settle the issue. They will call in your employer and they will ask them why they're not paying. If they couldn't, they will refer you to court. But you definitely have a claim there.
One here as well, I guess maybe for you, Shane, although it's a difficult one to answer specifically. What is it a fair expectation of package in today's economic conditions? I'm a mid-senior sales guy. I got offered 5% better. I asked for 10%. Is it fair? I mean, a lot of people aren't getting increases at all, are they?
Yeah, I don't know. If you're moving for 5%, I think, you know, that's not a very good strategy at all. I mean, you should really look at the main metric, especially if you're selling something, to have a product, service, or company that you really believe in, that you really feel is making a difference. We shouldn't aspire to have a career. We should aspire to make a difference. And find an organization which you really feel passionate about, that you would almost work for free for. And you will find that your salary, especially if you're in sales, will increase dramatically. You should be focused on developing capabilities. And, you know, if you could even increase your industry knowledge and sales capability by 5 or 10%, you would increase your salary by at least 50%. So you can easily double or triple. A lot of people don't believe this, but I would challenge any executive who worked with me, and I've done it many times, that you can double your income within 24 months using the right career strategies and principles. So moving for 5% is something I would definitely not subscribe to.
Unless you wanted to go to that place anyway and it was for a different set of reasons.
Yeah, and then if it's a different set of reasons, and the reasons should be is that you have a vision of who you want to become, and that job and that company will help you realize that vision, then you should take that job.
Okay.
Doubling your salary in 24 months. That we're going to talk, but something that you just said about, you know, making sure that you work for a company that you are really passionate about, that you would almost work for free for. I want to ask you about this, because some people, they are passionate and they go and they start working at a company, and you almost spread yourself too thin, right? But then your boss might see that, you know, you're willing to kind of just go along and just, you're not asking for the salary. How do you kind of balance those two things? How do you ask for what you're worth? I mean, you're kind of saying people will see what you're worth, but what if they think, oh, they're fine, that they're passionate, that they're working for the passion, they're not working for the money, particularly for women. This often happens with women.
Well, I'm not a woman, so I can't say, but but there's a lot of themes there that you're talking about. I think, number one, just throwing yourself into your job and doing a great job is not enough. It's not going to cut the mustard. It's not going to get you the promotions that you need. And some people make that mistake, is that they work so hard on their job, they don't work on themselves. So you actually need to take some time. And one thing, the trait of top performers, one of the traits is having excellent time management skills. So you need to take some of that time and invest in developing yourself and for your future role. So, and you know, you look at, you know, as you just mentioned, doubling your salary in 24 months, you'll look at the highest paid radio presenters in the world. They're making absolutely millions. It doesn't matter what profession you're in. You can definitely achieve that and you can double your salary. So part of it is focusing on developing your capabilities. The second thing is bringing visibility to yourself. And what a lot of privileged kids do, i.e. daddy's a billionaire and he went to Harvard and now I went to Harvard, they get put into what's called international management programs and they're assigned a mentor. Their mentor is generally on the board of that huge conglomerate and grandfathers them in to very senior roles. So you can also jump the system and you can pick yourself a mentor on the global board of your organization and meet with that person once a month and get them to give you tips on how you can progress through the organization. That's just one small thing.
That was clearly our problem, Sally. We didn't go to Harvard and we didn't get a mentor who's
exactly
in the top of the company. Lots more to come on Career Connect this evening. Shane's here, Abdullah's here. Your questions to come as well.
No matter your preferred communication, stay in touch with Drive Live. Only on Dubai Eye 103.8. Career Connect.
It is Career Connect. We've got Shane Phillips, Managing Director of the Phillips Group with us. We've got Abdullah Shanene from partner at BSA, Ahmed bin Hazim and Associates in the studio. 4001 if you've got a question for either of them. We've been talking about discrimination. We've been talking about slacking. We're going to continue talking about slacking in a minute. But Sally, we've got some questions in.
So this one, no name on it, saying my line manager yesterday told me that senior management were seeking my termination. They advised me to resign and I've got a 3-month notice period. If I submit the resignation before they begin any termination proceedings, am I automatically entitled to work the 3 months notice period with pay?
Well, if you resign, it's up for the company to tell you we don't want you to work during your notice period or we want you to work.
Mm.
But in this specific situation, I would not recommend the employee to resign because if he doesn't get paid, he will not be able to successfully pursue a compensation for his termination. So I would suggest that you wait it out, get terminated, unless you don't want that showing on your CV.
Okay, that's the answer for that one. Moyes has texted in on the Dubai Eye app saying, I switched company in March after a lengthy court settlement process. My previous company gave me a PDC for the settlement. When I deposited the check, it bounced and the company is not responding. I approached Dubai Police, but unfortunately, they haven't registered a complaint as the CEO is a local. Please advise.
That does not make sense. You should definitely appoint a lawyer and have them pursue that.
Mm-hmm.
Post-dated check that bounced is a criminal offense, and it's a good way to put pressure on the company and its shareholders to make the payment. So it doesn't make a difference what nationality you're from. A criminal offense is a criminal offense.
And the police take bounce checks still very seriously, don't they?
Absolutely.
They will follow that up. So if I was you, I'd go try the police again because any bounce check is a serious matter here.
And so let's continue talking about the topic of slackers, Shane. This is the topic that we're talking about today with you. This is a topic that came to mind. And I just want, before we keep going with it, I want to ask you kind of what percentage we see in the workplace. How commonplace is it to see people?
How common is the slacker?
Who are just, yeah, really. No, what's the percentage of people who kind of just go along with everything and just, you know, don't really bother too much? They're just fine to go along, to get along.
Well, I don't have specific statistics, but I can speak from the experience of interviewing. I probably do somewhere between 5 to 8 interviews almost every day, sometimes 7 days a week. And I can tell you probably about 80% of people are just clueless at the wheel, have never read anything about their profession. They have never read a book about their profession, or do they keep up to date on the industry, you know, magazines or papers. They are.
So would you class them as slackers?
Yeah, I would say they're underperforming, right? I think they're definitely, the potential within those individuals is immense and is not being accessed. And I think most people, if you went up to them and said, hey, are you really pushing yourself as hard as you can? Are you achieving everything you can? Most people will say no. In fact, and then the classic response is, you know, money's not everything and I have other things. My work is not me. And, you know, and this is classic 9-to-5-er weekend warrior type of talk. Which is fine, but
I don't think that somebody who doesn't want to give their whole life to their job and likes a bit of work-life balance is necessarily a slacker.
Clearly, so we don't.
Abdullah, come.
We don't agree.
Abdullah, come on in here because I feel Shane's on one side of the slacker fence. Just because you want work-life balance, that doesn't make you a slacker, does it?
I agree, but I can't tell if Shane is encouraging slacking or not.
No, I'd say you're anti-slacking, or you're just.
I'm not pro. I'm not pro for or against. My statement was is the majority of people are slacking. Now, how do you define slacking? I would say that, you know, if you can run at 30 kilometers an hour and you're running at 7. That would be slacking, and that's what I think the majority of people are doing in their jobs. They can go at least 300%. They could be 300% more productive than they are. And in fact, when you look at what the top performers, I think the statistics and the studies show they're 400% more productive than the average worker. And you have Pareto's law, which stands true, which states that 20% of the people deliver 80% of the result, and that's generally true across all industries and businesses. So,
okay, well, so let me ask you both this. If you're part of that 20% who's delivering 80% of the work, that can be extremely frustrating. You're in a team and you are pulling your weight far more. You're running at 30K, the rest are running at 10, whatever. How, and I'm going to ask you both this, how do you deal with that? How do you approach either the colleague that you think is slacking or your boss, or what do you do? Because this can be an immensely frustrating situation at work and it can really damage your own morale.
But before that, Claire, I just think we've got an issue with the whole definition, you know, of what a slacker is. And we've got a text kind of on this asking, why does your American, you're Canadian, aren't you? You're not American.
Yeah, I'm Canadian.
Canadian specialist address only the 1%ers. Because that's what it sounds like. You're calling the 1%ers, the ones, the elite up the top, they're the ones who are doing the work. Well, this text says most of us are 99%ers. And your guy is being elitist.
Well, I think, you know, now what's great is in the digital age, we have so much information about people's behaviors. And when you look at YouTube and you look at what happened when the internet, people were saying, wow, this is going to be this huge intellectual blossoming of humanity, et cetera, et cetera. And when you look on the YouTube, you can take, a very intellectual content, like information from Noam Chomsky or from Yale or any of these professors or any of this stuff. And those videos may have, if they're lucky, 1,500 views, 2,000 views. And then you look at the idiocy like Gangnam Style, which has billions or trillions of views. And I think you really have your metric as to where the 1% and 99% stand.
Well, yeah, how do you feel about that? Still brings me back to my question. If the definition of a slacker is somebody who is in the 80% that isn't doing most of the work, you said 20% of people doing 80% of the work.
Pareto's law.
So the 20% are the not slackers and the 80% maybe, the remaining are slackers. So if that's our definition, how do you approach it with a colleague so that this changes, the balance changes?
Well, I don't think you can change it because Pareto's law was actually invented by a monk.
No, you can. You're in work, you're in a team, and you're part of a team, and you're working with other people. You've got to be able to do something about
it. Sure, but let me just quickly say Pareto's law was done by a monk who was observing Pareto's law in the harvest of peas, that it's actually animals and plants also exhibit Pareto's law, that 20% of peas will give you 80% of your harvest. So it's beyond our conscious dealings. But you may also be cursed before you start, because What a lot of people ignore is the board, and the board in some companies may have, you know, you may have investor representatives on there who don't even care, or you have people who are on the board who are just there to beef up their profiles. You know, so if the board is not high performance and focused, which means there's a clear idea of where we're going as an organization and how we're going to get there, it's not going to trickle through the organization. And then you have to look at the CEO. What stage of life cycle is the CEO at? Are they 2 years away from retirement? Means they're risk appetite is probably going to be a lot less. You don't want to risk getting sacked 1 year before you go into retirement. A younger CEO may have a bigger risk appetite, but then again, they may not have the wisdom and experience, so they can also run the company that rocks. So it starts with the leadership team and then trickles down. Then if you have all of those things right and you're in an organization and then you have people reporting to you who are slacking, then you need to apply performance management onto them. And this is one of the biggest issues, because when you have a performance management happening, what usually happens is you're taking your best performer and putting them on your worst problem. And if you want to be successful in business, you need to take your best person and apply them to your biggest opportunity, not your biggest problem. So slackers rob the top performer of his career, and they rob the organization of their opportunities. So what I would say is, really, you need to vet them before they come in. And secondly, you have to get rid of them during their probation period if you can.
What do you think, Abdullah? What would you do if somebody on your team, you felt that you were working a lot harder than them and they weren't contributing in the way they should?
Well, that depends. If that person reports to me, I would like to have a verbal one-on-one chat with them, try to see why they're not motivated. But if it's someone on my level, I wouldn't interfere, because I don't want to create that sort of friction within the team.
But then wouldn't your frustration be building at work if you weren't able to address that? You'd just be quietly simmering.
There's a lot of stressful things and frustrating things that you will face on a day-to-day basis. So whatever frustrates you, just look the other side. That's how I'll deal with it.
So the slacker would get away with it if they worked with Abdullah, Sally. What about you?
you
would you tell me if I was slacking, wouldn't you?
I would, yeah. I'd be like, you know, Claire, you could do a bit better in this area or that. But you know what? You've got to have that trust between you, and you've got to trust that
neither
you
of us
are,
slack, do we, Sally?
Well,
neither
we
of
don't.
Us do.
Well, that I've never had to tell you, let's be honest.
Well, you would, though, so I know that I'm not.
That's the thing. You've got to have that respect between you, between you and your colleagues, to know that they're definitely at that level where they are motivated, where they are putting in that effort as well. But great messages coming in.
There are some
on
good ones.
4001. This is great, and goes back to your point, Shane. Running at 30 Ks an hour, you will get tired soon. Running at 7 Ks, I will last longer. And the health issues related to job stress performing at peak. So people are just, they're happy. They're happy going at that middle level. They're not motivated. Nobody wants to be that peak performer that you're talking. Nobody wants to be Steve Jobs. We just want to get along in life. Is that wrong?
There's nothing wrong with that, but I think it's a philosophy that maybe worked in the 20th century. Now, as we head into one of the greatest moments of change in the history of humankind, you now have industries which are going to be completely disrupted. And at the end of the day, the rate of change in the executive has to be greater than the rate of change in the market, or you're going to become obsolete. So this theory that I can run at 7K and I'll last longer would be fine if the market did not change. Mm-hmm. But you can see today 50% of Fortune 500 companies go off the Fortune 500 list every 12 months. So you have a 50% attrition rate with the largest, biggest, most profitable companies. So you're heading into major, major changes. Just drive down Sheikh Zayed Road and there's a new dealership there, the Tesla dealership. And, you know, everywhere you look, you can start to see that this is the calm before the storm. You probably have about 2 or 3 more years of some form of stable economy before we're seeing complete disruption. And C players and B players will be the first ones to go. These industries are going to be completely wiped out. So it's change or die.
So that's what you're saying. You're saying basically you've got to be ahead of the game. And if you're not ahead of the game, that's it. You're done.
You're dead.
The great thing about you, Shane, is you're like Marmite. Some people love you. Some people don't agree with you at all. Zahabe says, I agree with him so much. So that's good. The next, Winston says, I can't believe the 80-20 principle is being applied to the workplace. I cannot accept that corporate Dubai is being supported in its success by 80% of the workers being slackers. Thanks, says Winston. And Zahabe also says, unfortunately, slackers are not reprimanded and often they get promotions. So maybe we'll come to that shortly. How do you get ahead if you are a slacker?
We want to hear from you. Find us on Facebook. Tweet at Dubai Eye 1038 FM.
You're listening to Drive Live. We're talking careers this afternoon. And we've got Shane in the studio. I've got Abdullah in the studio. And we're having such an interesting debate. We can't stop talking through the break there. Abdullah, you were just talking about something very interesting there, that sometimes slackers maybe get to solve a problem quicker because they take shortcuts.
Exactly. So I was asking Shane when we were talking about someone going at 30 Ks an hour and someone going 7 K an hour. So if someone is going at 7K and he's getting there before the one at 30K, I think that's a smart person, even though he's slacking.
And you think that sometimes can happen. And there's a few people on the text line agreeing with you. Dave says, I don't run and I now drive a Ferrari and that's because I'm not a slacker. I love Shane, he says. So thanks for that, Dave. Someone else here, in most organisations in the UAE, the performers get overburdened and burnt out in a very short time and then usually leave for another job. So are you saying a slacker doesn't get burnt out and is able to sort of keep going and sort of pounding away at a problem, Abdul?
Exactly. Yep.
I think the slacker is already burned out. That's why they can't run at 30 kilometers. But just to my colleague's point here, sometimes when we place a very high-performing CEO, we will actually coach them to adopt some slacking principles actually in the first 100 days on the job. And so, for example, a very high-performing CEO will throw themselves at the biggest problems. These are legacy issues, maybe redoing the core IT system or changing the ERP system, or these are big infrastructure changes that can take 2 years before you see any bottom line result in. Whereas you're going to be assessed in your first 100 days on the job. What do you have to show for it? Whereas a slacker will go for more highly visible wins. They will go for projects which help them build relationships at the top. So, hey, let's redo the corporate video. Let's do the corporate website.
So they're the attention grabbers, and that's sometimes why it feels like they're getting the credit when they haven't really pulled their weight in your mind as their colleague.
That's the tenet of that's the crux of being a slacker is how do you get the most credit by doing the least amount of work? And so there is some things that, at the end of the day, you can't, if you're not working hard, you definitely won't last. So I don't think the whole endurance argument really stands. But at the same time, sometimes top performers don't put enough emphasis on the power of relationships, the power of culture, and the importance of visibility. And these are all items where the slacker naturally gravitates to.
Something I want to ask you about, you actually had, there are traits of slackers that we should be copying. No, this is good. This is good and this is interesting. Can you go through some of these?
Yeah, well, I think for one, when you look at if you look at highly intelligent people, one of the traits with them is they're very unagreeable. They'll be very opinionated, and it's often very easily to get in an argument or to have an abrasive experience with someone who has an IQ of 180. In fact, if you look at the people with the highest IQ in the world, the top three of them, they've all gone through long periods of unemployment. Whereas slackers will very rarely get in an argument with you. They don't really have the energy. They don't want to. They're not that motivated to get into a fight with you.
They don't want to lose their job.
And they'll just let things slide and they'll go along to get along. Like, what do you want? The room to be blue? Fine, we'll make it blue. Whereas a top performer will be, well, the psychology of blue is not right for our branding. And they'll get into a big brouhaha with you. So one is going along to get along. That's one thing that helps the slacker. What the slacker has going from his social capital, because they'll hang hang out with you, they'll go to your birthday, they'll go to the movies. They have the relationship capital and that social equity in the organization. Secondly, slackers won't try new approaches. They're not innovative. They're going to go for the tried and tested path, which is sure to give them an acceptable but mediocre result. And sometimes that's a safe path. So that's another thing the slacker does. A top performer may come into an organization and, you know, you may want to be innovative. Don't be innovative in your first 100 days in the job. Build credibility, build those relationships, and then in year two, once you have a reputation, then go and do the innovative Then you start running faster. You start making the big changes. So the issue is that when you join a new organization or you take on a new leadership role, don't immediately gravitate into big changes unless it's a burning platform. If the organization is a burning platform and it's change or die and you're being brought in as the change agent CEO, then fine, you can get away with it. But generally, and this is where slackers may have an advantage when they come into a new role, I'm not going to change anything. I'm going to go with the flow.
I'm going to fit in here.
Those are a few of the things.
It's a good question here. What about a person who's expected to know how to do things without proper training, but they're considered slackers because they're actually in the wrong position and haven't been trained properly, so they don't know what they're doing?
Well, how did you get into the...
Oh, come on, there's
position?
Lots of companies here we know that don't train their staff properly, and then the poor staff are hung out to dry.
If you're complaining that you got a job you're not qualified for, your employer is giving you a chance to do a job rather than sack you, and you're complaining about that, that person should just be fired. They should go in tomorrow morning, hand in your resignation. You don't appreciate your role. You know, I had a guy who was practically homeless and developed himself into one of the top private bankers in the region. And today he drives a, you know, luxury sports car, blah, blah, blah. What he did is every time he was in a meeting, he didn't understand what it was. He went and he Googled it. He Investopedia'd it. And he got a couple mentors. He went at night. He did a CFA. Today he's CFA level 3. And if you hear him speak, it's like financial poetry coming out of his mouth. He developed himself. So, you know, if you're in a
train
job,
yourself, if train not yourself. Training you. Take the initiative.
The organization is not responsible for developing you. You are responsible for developing you.
We're out of time as usual, guys. We'll just end on these couple of texts. Thank you for all your messages this evening. It's great to be part of the 20% that drives a business, but after years of pushing and not being rewarded, you have to learn to adjust. Is that slacking? And someone else says, what if I want to be a monk and head over to India and meditate on the foothills of the Himalayas? Well, that is absolutely your right, and you should do that if you want to. And that's a nice note to end. Well, okay, but it's got to be a brief word, Shane.
One of the great things slackers do is they copy top performers. And I think everyone can do that. Pick up your top competitor's annual report. Look at what's making them successful. Adopt it as your own. That's how they built Walmart. That's what Sam Walton did. That's what so many business people do.
That's Shane Phillips there, Managing Director of the Phillips Group. He always has to have the last word. Also in the studio with us today was Abdullah Shnane. Thank you very much for being with us, Abdullah. Good to see you. Partner at BSA, Ahmed Bin Hazim and Associates. Thank you to everyone who messaged in on our topics tonight.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.